This is CliffCentral.com.
All right, let's meet our guests this morning. I've known Michael and Kinga for a little while. I wouldn't claim to be friends of theirs, but they are terrific people who started Kolkakios 25 years ago. The first Kolkakio was in the foreshore in Cape Town. Gord, you've been to that one, right?
I've been to many Kolkakios, yeah.
These two worked like slaves to start that business 25 years ago. Slaves in the kitchen. And yesterday I was made a slave in the kitchen.
Slave to the kitchen.
Oh, no. All right, so yesterday I was a slave in the kitchen for exactly, 15 minutes. And I learned how to make my favorite salad, which was lots of fun. But they're here now, and I thought we'd introduce them to everybody. So, Michael Taraspolsky, how are you, sir? It's nice to see you, man.
Good morning, all of you.
Good. Come forward to this microphone. I know radio is not your thing. Pizzas and salads and Kolkakios is. What do you want? Do you not like the microphone?
No, I like the mic.
You keep moving it away from yourself. Kinga, nice to see you.
Morning.
Good. Thank you for taking us through yesterday and showing us how the actual, like, the real work happens. Because everybody thinks, when you go into a restaurant, Mubs, you just see calm, and you see beautiful food, and you see happy people talking, and you see drinks being served, and all of that stuff. Meanwhile, in the kitchen, it's like chaos. It's organized chaos, but there are 20 people running around, doing this, chopping that, throwing this away, gathering this, making new stuff here. It's mad. I've never ever seen the inside of a restaurant kitchen in my life. It's something else. You guys used to work in there yourselves too.
I still do.
Yeah, you still do.
Yeah, I still do.
Kinga designs all the items on the menu, by the way.
Oh.
Hope you like them.
Yes, we do.
And we talk about them all the time. But you two, how did you meet? Because I want to get into your story in a minute, Kinga, and yours, Michael. But how did you two meet?
So we both were from Joburg before we moved to Cape Town, and I used to frequent a restaurant in Illovo, Cornuti.
Yeah.
So you might know it.
Absolutely.
And Kinga used to work there, and I used to go and eat there a lot, and that's where I met her.
Uh-huh.
I was a waitress.
She was a waitress, then there a manager, and then she opened Svigati down the road in River Club.
Yeah.
And yeah, that's... I was just a patron.
And then what? How did you end up coming up with this idea of starting Kolkakios together?
So I woke up one day, my parents probably would have said riffraff.
Yeah.
Pretty wild, going nowhere fast. And I literally woke up one day and I decided I want to be in the restaurant business. I'm going to be good at this. Never worked a day in my life in a restaurant. And I just knew it was going to be great.
How old were you at the time?
I was a late bloomer. I was about 27, 28.
Okay.
And my whole family had immigrated, so there was like nobody keeping an eagle eye over me. And I was wild.
Hmm. What is this, like partying every night?
No, I was...
hanging around with rough people.
Yeah. I'm sure my friends will get a chuckle out of that. No, so I thought if I'm going to do this, I've got to do it with somebody who knows something about restaurants. I'm quite entrepreneurial.
Yeah.
And I thought, I know exactly the person. So, and that was Kinga. So I approached her, and she was 19 at the time. And I said, let's go to Cape Town and open a restaurant. And we're going to be bloody good at this. And she said, well, how do you know? I said, I just know I'm going to be bloody good at it. You are already bloody good at it. So she agreed, much to my surprise. And we came down to Cape Town. I arrived a month or two before her to build the restaurant. And she came down and we opened the first Kolkakio on her 21st birthday.
Jeez.
She was in the kitchen, I was in the front. I learned how to cook pizza the day before, not very well, because on the first night I burnt all the food. And I had to give all our customers free food. True story. But I learned really quickly not to burn the food. And a lot of those customers, in fact, most of them are still regulars today, 25 years later.
I remember having my first pizza at Kolkakio in the foreshore, what was it, 20 years ago? My aunt took me there. And I thought, yes, this is a pizza. There's just something different about it. But it was memorable, and I've been a patron ever since. And it was nice to meet you guys and find out the story of the restaurant, how that happened. But how did your story together happen? Because you ended up married and you have two children.
Yeah.
You have two lovely girls. So how did that happen? Was that after you'd started the restaurant, or during, or before?
A little bit of a gray area, but it was, you could say after. When we moved down, we were sharing an apartment.
Uh-huh.
And I guess just working 18-hour days and was spending 24 hours.
It's like Survivor. When you're on the island with people, you just, you know, you end up going, huh, okay. So, he's not so bad. She's not so bad.
You either murder them or you hook up. One or the other eventually.
I think she's tried to murder me a couple of times. No, I'm just kidding.
But Kinga, you're originally from Poland.
Correct.
And you have, I mean, I thought this was a really interesting story because I don't know how many people in this country fully appreciate what kind of a life immigrants can have. You know, we often hear about people who have to cross the border from Zim or from Mozambique and how tough that is. But coming from Poland is it was no breeze for your family. Getting out of Poland wasn't even easy, right?
Sure. Well, my father had to run away.
Yeah.
My father was working in Iraq at the time, if I remember correctly. He was on contract. So you had to get a special consular passport to leave Poland. So he had this passport, and then my parents decided behind the scenes that they wanted to leave.
So Poland wasn't very pleasant.
No, I mean, it was the communist era, and they decided we were going to go on holiday. So we went on holiday to Austria, and subsequently we didn't go back.
Is that the best way to get out of Poland?
I think at the time it was. I think you either went to Germany or you went to Austria. You went to one of the countries that you could get out of. And also because there were the embassies and people would approach where to go, whether South Africa or to Australia. It was depending who was taking people in. At the time, with my dad's profession of being a mechanical engineer, Australia was prepared to take us.
So then you all had to go from Austria to Australia?
Correct. And then we lived in Australia.
So it was you, your mum, your dad, your gran?
No, not my gran, my sister. It was just the four of us.
All right.
It was just the four
and
of
you
us.
And you ended up in Australia. And you couldn't speak a word of English.
No English. Yeah.
So you had to learn English from Australians. Do you know how hard that is? You don't have any idea how difficult it is to learn English from Australians.
They're liberal with their swear words.
So how long were you there for?
Just short of 2 years.
And how old were you at the time?
So we didn't, 11.
Wow.
So just for 2 years there. So we got here when I was just under 13. We had to, because the government pays for you to go to Australia, then because we were there just short of 2 years, we didn't get our citizenship, we didn't get our papers, and my parents had to pay back what it cost the Australian government to take us to Australia.
So then they were in debt.
Why weren't you keen on Australia? What didn't work out about going to Australia?
You know, because in Poland, I think South Africa was made out to be such a great country. They said, you come here, you play tennis, you almost see those lions walking in the streets.
Yeah.
But they made it out to be really good, and it was recommended that we come here. So I think that's where my parents, when they got the communication from the South African government and asking whether we still want to come, I think my father thought, well, we've traveled so far, maybe let's try. If there's, you know, he thought it was going to be better opportunities.
Yeah.
Which I think it turned out okay.
Well, it turned out okay because you guys had to work your backsides off. I mean, you got here and it wasn't like it was a whole lot better.
No, not at the time. It obviously improved a lot later in life.
Is it true that you all had to live in a one-room place in Hillbrow?
We did, yes. And then we lived in another two-bedroom place with no fridge. Yeah, we did. We struggled. We really did.
And that's when you kind of started doing jobs in restaurants?
I started waitressing, I think I was 16, if I'm not mistaken, at the pizzeria in the Oval. I can't remember the name of it. I think I was 16, and my sister started working. I can't remember what my sister's first job was, but we had to fend for ourselves. We had nobody doing anything for us. We had to do the ironing, we had to do the cooking, we had to do the cleaning at home. Jeez. We did everything. We had to be self-sufficient. Very different to the lifestyle my children lead these days.
Yeah, but everybody's children these days compared to then. I mean, this is the long, hard yards that have to be put in.
Yeah.
Because people look at your business now that you two have got with, what, over 35 branches all over the country and even one in Namibia and all over the place. And they say, oh, well, this looks like a great business. It must be really, you're so lucky.
You know what, Gareth, I can tell you one.
They don't think about this part of the story.
No, but I think it was always a standing joke that I'm the Polish workhorse because it's been instilled in me, I think. And even the other day I was driving the car with my dad and my dad reminded me, he says, you forget how your grandmother used to give you the keys to the ice cream shop and say, go and open the ice cream shop, when it was at the time that I decided to go back to Poland because I missed my grandmother so much. And
how old were you then? 13?
Yeah, just after we came back. And I can't remember who it was.
15.
So you were opening up. You were opening up the ice cream shop at 13. I mean, that's just unbelievable.
You know, so I always had the work ethic. I think it's the work ethic was always instilled in me. The harder you work, the more you'll have. The harder you work, the more you'll have. And that was always the case. And I'm grateful that I've got that work ethic. I really, it's amazing. I think Michael sometimes struggles with me. He says, you know, that my business always comes first. But it's not that. I've got that. I love my business and I've got the passion for the business. And I'm glad that I've got something that I still get up for and I absolutely love it. I really do. And I know sometimes my franchisees maybe get a little bit put out by me because I go in there and I kind of say, this is not right. But I really do love it.
Your attention to detail is incredible. So I was in the kitchen yesterday, Mubs, and I was chopping up carrots. And I said, is that okay? And she said, no, you must chop them a bit smaller. I was like, you know, that is, there's such attention to detail. That's why the stuff is good. That's why you know what you're doing. And you do love it. I could see you were in there. You were running around. You were, where are these seeds? I need the pickled onions. I need this. And you were just putting it all together. You love doing that.
I do love it, I must say.
And most people who would be doing that for 25 years would get bored and would hate it.
I have the days when I think to myself, yeah, I don't know how much longer, but... As I say, my kids are also getting older now, and I guess we're getting into the next phase of our lives. And maybe I'll get into it even more than I am at the moment.
Do you ever cook for Michael at home and the kids?
I do.
She's an amazing, amazing chef. Well, spoilt at home.
Clearly, everybody else gets to share.
A bad day at home is a good day. I tell you.
It's not like that old chestnut of everybody has shoes except for the cobbler's son.
No.
No, but I don't like the everyday.
Do you have a really fancy kitchen at home?
No.
We got the worst kitchen.
Really?
Yeah, because we didn't have a lot of cash when we built that house. So we've got what we could afford at the time, and it's never really been upgraded. So
one
it's very
crap
small.
Oven. I mean, it's like open it up, close it with the leg, and get it all out.
And everybody lives around that kitchen. When our guests come, everybody's around the kitchen that counts. It all happens around that space. But Kinga's amazing. I mean, she just whips up stuff. It's quite incredible. She comes in very quickly, and you've got a meal that's like way better than average. Way, way better.
Now, you said that all of your family had emigrated.
Yeah.
So were you on your own?
I was here alone. Yeah. We were going to leave for the States in 1978, and my dad got cataracts in his eyes, and he had to give up that job. And he's a doctor. In 1982, my older sister left. In 84, my middle sister left.
Yeah.
And then my dad kept getting job offers in the States and turning them down. And eventually got a job offer at Harvard. And he said, listen, if I don't go now, I probably won't get another one. He was 57.
Yes.
And he left. And my mom followed 6 months later with my little sister. She just finished matric. And I think they thought I'd just follow. And I like was freedom. So I never followed. And eventually I gave back my green card, which everybody says, you did what? I said, no, I gave it back. I could never live there. They're way too conservative and narrow-minded in the States. Not a place to live. Good place to visit.
When you started this business, this was at a time in South Africa, 1992. Nobody really knew what was going on. This was not an easy time to start anything. Funny, I was talking to Adrian Gore the other day about this. He started Discovery, right? Same time. He's 25 years old.
Look
how well he's done. Yeah.
A little bit better than us.
Well, he's done okay. He's the kid's done all right.
We just drove past his building. Yeah, it's pretty okay.
It's huge. Have you seen the new Discovery building, by the way?
I've yet to make that discovery.
It is Santon CBD.
It's phenomenal. Awesome. Anyway, he was saying, what a time to start a business. Nobody knew what was going on. 1992 was before our first general election, the proper, you know, the birth of our democracy. It was after the ANC had been unbanned. There was all that instability, Chris Hani, all of that stuff had happened in that time. No one with their head screwed on right would start a business then.
They thought we were crazy.
Right?
Well, people did think we were mad. We packed up our stuff. We went down to Cape Town and we opened a business. And I knew nothing. I mean, I went down there. I found a site in a building that was over 100 years old on a city block that did not have another building on it. And there were no other offices or buildings around us. And I thought it was a brilliant, brilliant site because it was this character building, 5 meter high ceilings. And even the agent who was showing me all these sites around town, and I said, what about the one in your building? And he said, do you really want to put a restaurant there? I said, it's fantastic, absolutely. So he was just happy to sign the lease. And we went in there. I drew the plans for the restaurant myself with graph paper and a ruler because we didn't have enough cash to get a designer to design our restaurant. So I drew it and I in triplicate and I landed up at council. And the guy said, yes. I said, I'm here to give you my plans. I'm opening up a restaurant. He said, where are they? I gave them to me. He said, what's that? I said, they're the plans. He says, you can't give me that. I said, why not?
You're an architect.
He said, well, for a start, he says, they've got to be to scale. I said, they are to scale. He said, well, you know, you need to have colors for like the blue for the water and red for the electricity. I said, have you got some colored pencils? He said, yes. And I grabbed them and I put in the colors. And I said, yeah. He said, it's highly irregular, but I guess there's nothing quite, you know, wrong with them. And I said, well, there we go. He said, no, not so fast. He said, you've got to walk your plans through council. So I said, what does that mean? He said, you've got to go to each department. You've got to get a stamp from electrical, from hygiene, from everywhere. So I walked through council in 2 hours and I got every single stamp required for my plans. I think possibly the fastest plans passed ever in the history of plans.
And you drew them with your own hand.
And I walked downstairs and I got my business license and then we had to go back and build the restaurant. And we painted the floors of our restaurant ourselves. It was crazy.
And why Italian? Is because that's the background you came from. You were working in those classic old Italian restaurants.
Well, I guess it was the one restaurant that I worked at, yes, and I learned a bit. But we always knew that Italian is the way to go. You know, people don't get tired of pizza.
And salad. You do not ever get tired of pizza.
Of Italian food.
I've woken up some morning. I could eat it in the morning. I could eat it in the afternoon. I could eat it in the night.
It almost needs a Surgeon General's warning on it. Like, this is an addiction-forming substance. If you have a pizza problem, phone the following hotline.
But is it – you guys do all these things, and I mean, I'm not talking about – product because it's something that I'm trying to plug here. I'm interested. You cater now to vegans. You give all these options to people who like, you know, gluten-free stuff, for example. I mean, is that a pain in the backside to keep extra stock for, or is it something that you want to do because you actually feel there's a creative need to service that part of the community?
So before Kinga jumps in, because I'm going to say that we've always been innovative. We've always wanted to be on the edge, leading rather than following.
Yeah.
And in that light, King is amazing. She looks around and she says, that's an area we've got to do something. And then she heads off and comes back with these amazing things. Sometimes I look at it and I say, you know, how many vegans are there out there?
It's 10, right?
Maybe 11. 11.
And yet they constitute 80% of the traffic on Facebook.
at least 80% of the
Which
traffic.
Is why we feed them so that they'll make a noise on Facebook. No, I'm just joking. But they are out there and they make a lot of noise. And the weird thing is my kids at school, like their friends are becoming like vegans overnight. Mm. I mean, like half the
It's very trendy.
Vegans, yeah. I can't understand.
So how do you make nice stuff for vegans? Because most of it's awful.
You can make
My poor sister, awesome. She's a vegetarian. She cooks these disgusting tofu strips.
No, she's at least allowed cheese and if she's a vegetarian.
No, but I tell you what, the vegan cheese that we have.
What do they make that out of?
They shouldn't be allowed to call it cheese.
Cashew nuts.
Yeah, it's made out of cashew nuts. And I think we've got a fantastic vegan cheese. I mean, you guys tasted it yesterday. Yeah, I thought it was pretty good.
What does it taste like, Sia? Is it like cheese? You've eaten cheese, right?
Yes.
You never know with Sia.
Yeah. No, I had both the vegan margarita and also the vegetarian margarita. So that's made out of real cheese. I love both. And maybe it's because I made them both myself.
Yeah, you did. He was employee of the month yesterday, wasn't he?
I called myself that. I don't know how much credibility it has.
No, but really, you can make the food really tasty. And I think that there's great products out there. And I think that we've been able to adapt and innovate really well. And I do think that that is what has kept us going for the 25 years.
I talk all the time on the show about I go there for salads, trying to maintain the fat bastardry problem. And aside from the salads being brilliant, I just always really like Calcacchio. So I can take friends there and they can have whatever they want and I can still have something that's quite healthy. And I do the make your own salad. The croutons, which is like the least healthy thing in the make your own salad, but I allow it. The croutons and the balsamic glaze are like the most power things ever. And then there's the
I saw how they made those croutons.
The roasted, they're so good. They're so much better than anyone else's croutons. And then my thing is roasted red pepper, butternut, shredded spinach, sesame seeds, the grilled chicken, the balsamic glaze, and if I'm feeling like living on the edge, then I go for the croutons as well. It's the best thing ever. Like, it's such a good salad.
He does. He goes on about it.
And the croutons. Time. That's. I wanted to ask you, like, how did you manage to perfect the crouton?
I saw this huge, massive pizza bread, right?
Yeah. You said to me, what's that?
What is it? Yeah. I said to him, what is it? Because it was massive. It was...
What, like a giant baguette?
No, it's like a big flat pizza bread.
Oh, right. Yeah,
but
giant
a big
pizza
one,
base.
It's like, it's huge. Yeah, it's like a base. And then...
And it's slightly thicker.
Yeah.
And it gets baked in a pizza oven. And then we cut it up and we turn it into croutons. So it's not that unhealthy. It's not your regular deep-fried croutons.
Blessed is the crouton.
So I think you don't have to feel that guilty.
I'm having a crouton today. I work right by Nicolway Centre. And I'm like going to Calcare's this afternoon. They'll see me there.
We should have had you in the kitchen yesterday.
Exactly.
And Mabali, we missed her.
They would have loved it.
And Ben.
I would have eaten everything in that kitchen. I would have gone food rage, and you don't want to see that.
That was spectacular.
That'd be restocking urgently this morning.
App, on your app, Ben is a maestro. That doesn't really mean anything, though, does it?
No, it does.
You make a big deal. It just means I'm frequent.
He's one of the guys that helps us pay the rent, one of the regulars.
Yeah.
Well, this one really close to my house. That's the only excuse, really. But yes, but this is the worst week to have ever got ill. Like, I've been looking forward to this whole pizza making thing for so long. And then, like, the 1 week I get ill, this is it. I had such FOMO looking at all those pictures yesterday on Instagram.
Well, guys, thank you so much for coming to spend some time with
us.
Thank you. It's lovely to actually introduce you to everybody else. And how are you doing in Joburg with the water? Isn't it nice?
Oh,
boy, did I have such a great shower. Mm. Oh, my word.
It's good, huh? You just turn that tap on.
And flush every time you want to.
I just went and flushed a few times.
I just flushed for shits and giggles.
I hate to bring up something lavatorial at this point, but since you've already gone there, Gord had what he called the most awkward...
I can't go into this during the Calcacchio conversation.
No, I want you to.
Okay, so...
We've got to talk about this. What happened
to you? I'm trying to put this... Now I'm embarrassed, whereas earlier I was confident about the story. So I was working at the Sevens, having a very good time, but running around and being quite busy. And in the backstage area where the teams get all organized, there's also like change rooms for the entertainment. And so there's a men's and a women's bathroom, and it's big. And it's like a change room bathroom. It's got showers and toilets and this big area where people change.
Yeah.
So there's a men and a women's. But the costume lady that's dealing with... my stuff and the lady I was working with.
Because you dressed up as a wolf.
Yes, I dressed up as a Viking with a wolf head.
Yes.
And my friend and colleague, Jade McKinnon, was also in the Viking outfit and doing drumming. So, and we're good friends with the costume lady. So that was where we made our little camp in the ladies' change room bathroom.
Right.
And every now and again, like, the cheerleading squad came in and I was like, cool, I'll step out for 10 minutes and go and grab something to drink. But for the most part, it was cool to chill there. Not a lot of nudity going on. But I and it's okay to go for a wee there. They can hear you, but it's all right. That's not a biggie. But eventually I needed there were worse problems on my hands. So I then decided, okay, cool, I'm going to go next door to the male change room, which is, in my experience, my two times I pop my head in there, it's empty and there's nothing going on. And as I walk in, First Project, who are the buff drummers, they're like handsome, they do two things: they drum and they're good looking. They're buff drummers. All of them, I think there's like six of them, are doing push-ups and they're like flexing with their rubber band resistance bands, and they're getting like ripped for the show that they're about to do. And there's loads of them, but I had to go and do my business while the six handsomest men in the world were working out in the room next to me. It was either that or like the cheerleaders or the buffest, handsomest oaks in the world had to hear me.
Well, the cheerleaders, you don't want to make a noisy, you know.
Yeah, well, that's exactly right. Oh, that's not an appropriate conversation for now. I was about to ask what everybody's personal favorite thing is at Kalkakia, but it feels like it's no longer...
I think you've ruined the moment.
I tried not to. You ruined the moment.
I have spoken about this 1,000 times. It's San Siro salad. I learned to make it yesterday. I didn't like mine as much as I like it when someone else makes it. That's always the way it goes, right?
It's always like that, yeah.
Yeah, the salad a la gourde, as I've just described. Is
salad a la gourde.
Yeah, I named it. Okay. That's my favorite. Cashews as well, but again, you're deviating further away from the diet compatibility if you crouton again cashewing. But if you're not concerned about those sort of things and you want to do an a la gourde, you chuck some cashews in as well. You guys?
Sure.
Yeah, what do you actually eat at your own restaurant?
I love pizza.
You do?
I hardly ever have something.
But you're so thin.
Thank you.
Well, how do you, because a lot of people think that you're going to get fat on pizza, but actually, is that true?
No, I've got good genes, I think. I don't think I'm ever going to be hugely fat, but I'm not in the best shape at the moment for me.
Okay. I can't even fit
into
pizza.
So pizza, what kind?
I mix it up. I like the Inferno, the prawn peri peri. I like a bacon, blue cheese, avo, and
what
chili.
What time do you guys open? No, seriously, what time do Kalkakia's open? The Benmore one's nearby.
I'm healthy at the moment, so I'll have the zucchetti verdurosa, the spiralized zucchinis.
But you like the melanzane.
I like the melanzane parmigiana. I chop and change. There's so much to eat there these days. Get a steak.
So Ben is also Polish, but he eats more than cabbage. Isn't that impressive?
Well, it's a menu of many things, Gareth.
And that's potatoes.
This is where we are so different.
Some of the dishes probably have cabbage, I'd guess.
You know, are you guys doing a traditional Polish Christmas this year? You're going to all sit around the cabbage and have a leaf each?
No, it's every second year.
We don't have cabbage.
What is this, boom time?
So I have an issue with cabbage.
What do Polish people do for Christmas?
I have an issue with cabbage. Yep. I can't stand it if it's cooked. I don't want it in my house. And Kinga brings home jars of this pickled cabbage.
She loves it.
I see it in the fridge.
They can't help it. They're Polish.
What is it?
It's not pickled. It's cooked. You know, Bigos?
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Michael.
It's a mixture of both.
No.
So what
no.
Do you,
it's delicious.
Do you Polish people have any fun at all?
Of course.
What do you do?
Not have fun.
When they hang out with me.
Yeah.
I had a Polish mate. I don't know what's become of him, but high school and early varsity. No, I'm serious. I had a Polish mate, and he was too much fun. Ernest. Yeah, see.
There's Gord's moment of kind of remembering his friend Ernest, who he doesn't care about
anymore.
No,
just the fact that he was too much fun as opposed to not fun.
Okay. Thank you, Gord. Denouement is what they call that in a story.
Okay. You were... stereotyping Polish people by saying they're not that much.
That explain the joke, Gord. It spoils everything. All right. Thank you very much, Michael, Kinga, Gord, Ben, Mavs, Sia, Amanda.
This is CliffCentral.com.